It's time now for another episode of Lectionary Lab Live, brought to you by Two Bubbas and a Bible, and recorded live from wherever we happen to be, usually somewhere in Florida and in Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to hear from you today. We're going to talk a little text and think about preaching on this, the 13th Sunday after Pentecost. These are the texts for August the 30th, 2020. We're going to take another step forward with Moses today, more than a step, actually, kind of a leap. You know, we've been in this series, and we took quite a leap through the life of Joseph a few weeks ago, and we're taking Moses from the bulrushes to the backside of the desert today. But appropriate other texts and a couple of interesting statements in the gospel for today. So I'm interested in hearing what you have to say. I just want to, though, before I forget, confirm for everybody that we did get the details up this week on our virtual retreat for Advent preaching. You will find that posted at lectionarylab.com. Also, you'll find the details on our Facebook page, Lectionary Lab. And want to invite you all to consider joining us on October the 1st and the 2nd as we talk about kicking off year B and working our way through Advent. 2-day virtual retreat. You get everything that me and Bubba have to offer, and it's considerable. We've piled up a lot of stuff between us over the years. We will be in a virtual format on Zoom, but that will include an opportunity to interact with one another and to work in some small groups and to work through those texts. So take a look at it, everybody, lectionarylab.com. Take a look at the virtual Advent preaching retreat from Two Bubbas and a Bible. We hope y'all will come and join us. Now, having gotten that word from our sponsor out of the way, let's take a look at these texts today and see what you got on your mind as we prepare to preach.
Well, I always look for a theme, whether there's one there or not. I do not think that I too often shoehorn something in that doesn't fit. But and so today I am thinking in terms of vocation, Christian vocation, not vocational school, although they could be this, they work together. What are you calling? What is your calling in life? What are you here for? Because each of these texts deal with questions of what has God called us to be and do. You've got the burning bush. This is, definitely Moses' vocation story. All this story and the part we skipped over, and he's over here in Midian and all of that going on, and he's out. And God wasn't intended to Moses just wander around far from Egypt with some sheep, There was something that all this story is building to, and this is it. And so vocation. In the gospel, I'm going to do chronologically in the gospel, Jesus is talking about his own vocation, that it's not that, it's this, and this argument about that. And then he turns to the disciples' vocation, which is related to his, and we'll talk about that. And then I think Romans, you can say that part of that is a more generic vocation, but it is an important vocation, and I call it the Christian vocation of peacemaking. What kind of people we are called to be in the world. So one of the questions, if you're one of the traditions that goes through all, reads all of the text every week, you might be able to talk about one of these texts, but draw in the others on the question of what has God called us to do and be in the world. So I would like to start with Exodus and talk a little bit about that. And I know you have plenty of things you preach on this text.
Well, I'll talk about that in a minute. I'm actually not preaching on this text. I shouldn't say that again. I'm going to preach in a real different way on this text, but
okay.
Got several ideas, and it's a fabulous text. So yeah, jump on in there.
So this is the initial part of a larger Moses vocational sequence that goes 3:1 through 4:17. And part of it, this sequence goes through Moses' various levels of reluctance and unwillingness to take this call. So this text in particular, the one we're looking at right now, and as you say, it leapt forward through a lot that got Moses from the bulrushes out to the shepherd. And most of us know that story. As somebody said, the flannel board story or the microfiche, depending on your age, but Sunday school, we know this, most of this story. And he's out there. And so verses 1 through 3 here kind of set the scene. You know, there's a shepherd, there's an angel in the bush, and he goes over and says what? Then verses 4 through 6 is where God identifies self. And so what's burning this bush? It's God. It's interesting and talks about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, the God of your ancestors and all that sort of stuff. So God IDs self. And then verses 7 through 10, God calls Moses, and one of the things he does here is this great sequence I'll come back to in a minute, and I'm going to walk through it in 7 and 8, where God says what God has done. I have observed, I have heard, I know what you're going through, I have come down, I am going to deliver, I am going to bring them up to the promised land. And then it says, I'm going to send you to do this.
Yeah.
He goes through all I've heard, I've seen, I'm going to do this, I'm going to defeat all these people. And Moses is going, yeah, baby, that's right. Come on, I'm with you. And he says, I'm going to send you to take care of it for me because I've got other things to do. This is this great calling sequence. And then in 11 through 14 is this dialogue that goes back and forth. And it's the great yes, but says, situation. Moses says, but Moses said to God, who am I? And he says, I'll be with you. And Moses said, well, what if they don't like me? And then verse 15 of this text, it goes back to the summary, the thus. There you notice, thus, you shall say this, Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, once again, who identifies himself, sent me to you, etc. So, that's kind of that sequence. It sets the scene. God identifies self. God says, this is what I want to do. Then he narrows it down to Moses, and Moses says, I'm not capable of this. And God says, yeah, you are. No, I'm not. And he thunders at him, I am who I am. You're going to go. And it ends, but Moses still hadn't said yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So here are a couple of outlines that work for me, and then you do what you know. One is a kind of five-step kind of thing where God observes, God sees, God cares, you know, God knows, God comes, God delivers, God sends. It's all of that. Now that's in that verses 7 and 8 there. This, oh, I have, I know, etc. And he can build off those texts as to the center activity here. And the amazing thing is this option of God going all the way through this and then turns to this one person, this shepherd, and says, I'm going to send you to do this. And that's one of the questions. We hear God, we want God to do all this stuff. Do we hear God saying, I'm going to send you?
But I'm sending you.
The other outline I have is more of a three-pointer. I really like it too as a way to walk through this story is the I am quest statements. So you got verse 4, you know, the voice calls out, and what does Moses say? He says, here I am. I'm here. Here I am. Then the next thing Moses says is it comes down to verse 11. After God's gone through all this, and I'm going to send that, Moses says, who am I? So he goes from here I am to who am I?
Yeah.
You know, and God answers back with, eventually says, I am who I am. And you shall say to them, I am has sent me. And the question is, it's not about who we are. It's about who God is and what God does through us. And that sequence, I really like a way to move through that is with the I am statements.
Yeah.
Here I am. Who am I? And God says, I am. Therefore, you are.
And that's really at the root of what you need to know. God is. And yeah, isn't there some Lutheranish type of statement you've made before?
More than likely, I say an awful lot, most of which I don't remember.
I just had flashes of it. It was talking through there. But when we think about this work, we realize it is all of God, right?
Yep.
It is all of God. And yet, God choosing to use us, God choosing to use we humans. That's this whole story. And throughout the summer and this whole series, I've been looking at this as each story comes along. Each one kind of stands alone, but again, they all fit together. Obviously, there's a narrative going on here, and I've tried to say, okay, so what do we learn about God in this situation? And you've enumerated it extremely well. I love all those action words. I've observed, I've seen, I've heard, I know the sufferings of my people. I have come. And so there's a lot of descriptions of God here. I love the way it sums up. Really, the basic message to Moses is, I will be with you. But this is your work, Moses. And that touches on that whole idea. We are called to work with God. Even though the power, the success, the whatever you may say, it really is all of God. This is God's doing. Moses is not enough on his own. He enumerates all the reasons, and it's a great extended dialogue. I don't speak well. I can't do this. They won't trust me. Don't you know they, you know, I have a price on my head back in Egypt. I had killed a man. This is not going to go well. No, Moses is not enough. You can't exactly turn that around and say God is not enough, but what you can say is God consistently chooses humans. We saw that in every story in Genesis, what these that we've been reading all summer. We saw frail human beings. We saw people who made poor decisions. We saw people who both had plenty and those who lacked. I'm thinking of Hagar, I'm thinking of Sarah, I'm thinking of, you know, the weaker characters. Even last week, we talked about the lesser characters and the story surrounding the birth of Moses. And yet, it is God consistently using us. So it's all of God, and yet, this your idea of vocation, or we sometimes talk about call, or God in our lives. And then the last part of that is, what do we learn about ourselves? What do we learn about God's people and God's relationship to them? And I got to say one thing for Moses. I love the delicious irony in the beginning of this story. God uses a bush that burns but is not consumed to reach Moses, who was basically a burnout at this time in his life. I mean, he is literally on the backside of nowhere, and he is
a burning bush for a burnout.
For a burnout. He's you know, he's blown every advantage he's ever had, seemingly. And he's probably down on himself. All I can do is wander with the sheep. My daddy-in-law gave me this job, you know. And so I love a little bit of that delicious irony. But here's the deal with Moses. Eventually and reluctantly, Moses says yes, and he goes. Okay. Yep. A reluctant yes is still a yes. And when you think about it, we are all, as quote, people of faith, we are all always deciding practically daily, but pretty regularly, we are all always deciding to obey and respond to God or not. And we are all variously reluctant and willing at times. The call of God is consistent. The presence of God is consistent. And we're all Moses. We have to decide. And on any given day, we may have 1,000 reasons why we're not the one.
Yep.
But God says, that's okay. I'm going to be with you, and I'm sending you. So a lot of good stuff to play around with. I'm pretty sure we will go out today's show. Our exit music is going to be a great piece composed by Ken Miedema. Many of you may have known Ken Miedema in earlier years. He was big in the Christian music scene. Old Ken is still around at 80 plus years old, I think. Blind musician, fabulously talented composer, and one of my favorite pieces he ever wrote is Moses. And I'm actually going to perform that with my accompanist at my church. I'm calling it a duet sermon because it is a monster of a piano piece, and she has worked hard. It's going to be playing it. I've been trying to brush up my vocal chops, and I'm going to be singing it. It's a great telling of the story, and it gets at all of these themes. We'll probably use it for the exit music today, and so you all give a listen towards the end, and that'll be a little extra bonus. So we'd best move on along.
Yeah, well, I'm shortly with the psalm, and we're back in Psalm 105 again. That's that great song of ascent, pilgrimage song, which rehearses the story of salvation. Start the verses 1-6. It's kind of this invitation to remember and to praise. And then it has various sections that remember particular events. And this one's tied in today with verses 23 through 26, in which it talks about what Moses does, going back and leading the people out. Then it jumps ahead to the end with another praise the Lord. So it does that, and that's why that one's tied there. I want to talk about Romans now. Romans 9 through 21 is a cornucopia of moral exhortation and admonition.
And that's all y'all have to say. Get up in the pulpit and whip that phrase out, and then be so amazed.
Our lesson from Romans, and as deep a voice as you can, is a cornucopia of exhortation and admonition of Christian behavior. It does break out in a kind of three-point thing. One is just a general do, dealing with personal behavior for Christians to do. Lots of let love be genuine, hate what is evil, hold fast what is good, this long list of things. Then in the second one is dealing with difficult people, 14 through 16. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them, etc. Mm-hmm. Then 17 through 21, I'm summarizing this was do not counterpunch. Mm. Do not counterpunch. That's a word I've heard a lot about lately, and I just want to say that Paul says, don't do that. I've always liked that kind of leap. Be nice to them. It'll heat coals of fire on their head. Well, if they got any conscience at all, some of them will just walk around and say, see, I won. Issue is not, for Paul, is not how you win against people. Is how do not let them win by taking your character. Mm-hmm. And this is his description of character. And this is that 12th chapter where, again, he's feeding off everything else in 11 because of the cross and because of who we are, because we're not being conformed to the world but transformed by Christ from last week. Now this is more about being transformed, right? Not conformed.
And that's you make the point often. And again, don't turn this around and say, well, look, I better do all of these things so that I'll become a living sacrifice, or I'll be worthy. No, it's because of what has already happened. This is the way it plays out.
Because, therefore, this is how you live your life. This is your vocation as a Christian who has committed oneself to Christ. So, Matthew 16, 21 through 28. This is the famous get thee behind me, Satan. It pairs up with last week very much. Peter has been called the rock because, which is so hilarious, which I pointed out in my sermon for last week. He calls him rock, the rock, even when he's in the midst of multiple things he's not very solid about. So this is one of those times when Peter has said, you are the Christ, the Son of God. And then from that time on, from after that, Jesus began to show his disciples what happened. So in 21, you got this summary of the kerygma. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are lots of summaries that go through here. Great suffering in the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes. Be killed and on third days be raised. We start having this life, death, resurrection with the suffering summary. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. This is strong language. And in the English translations, they put these exclamation points here and with "get me behind me, Satan." This is kind of a shouting match between Jesus and Peter. They're really remonstrating with one another.
They got their big boy britches on here.
Yeah.
Chest bumping on.
I don't know if I had just told somebody they're the son of the living God, if I would talk to him quite the way Peter did. You know, yeah. Lightning bolts are still in my thoughts. Yeah. But anyway, and he said, "This must never happen to you. And get behind me, you're a stumbling block." And the reason he calls him Satan is this ties all the way back to the temptations. This is the voice that tries to call him away from who he is called to be. He is lining out what it means. And he's talked about the cross without saying the word cross in that first line. And he comes back. "This is not what it is, Peter. You got to get back, Peter, because I'm standing firm." Then he turns to the rest of the disciples and said, "Now, if any want to be my followers, then you've got this threefold thing." Again, three. Deny self, take up cross. That's the first time we got cross here, and follow me. Then we got a couple of sayings. One may be tied here and another came from, I think, from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. "For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." I mean, it's obvious when you're telling people to follow me means taking up a cross and follow me, and I'm going to die on a cross. And particularly that Matthew is writing this after Jesus has died on the cross. This is encouragement that says you might face death, but if you try to save your life, whatever that means, you're going to lose it. But if you're willing to give your life to Christ and follow the cross, you're going to gain it. A lot of people say then that next line, I think it fits, but it probably came from somewhere else. The prophet of someone to gain the whole life, but it fits within. Then the last couple of lines, 27 and 28, you know, kind of, it brings it to a kind of eschatological ending here. The Son of Man is going to come, and it's kind of like, because, you know, you'll be judged by whether you gave your life for Christ or not, and that it feels kind of rough. And so one of the things I love, and Fred Craddock said in response to this, he said, it's important this is there, but the real import of this text is this: Christian behavior is not a result of believing the end is near, therefore I must behave or I will get judged. Christian behavior is a result of knowing that God is near. Mm. God has come down to Egypt, going all the way back to Exodus, and is delivering me. I want to behave. God has transformed me, and I am called to be this way. I mean, that's the theme that runs all through this. And I love what Craddock said, is Christian behavior is rooted in the notion that God is near and I live in God and God lives in me, not in fear of the end.
Thank you, Fred.
Yep.
Good thoughts, as Dr. Craddock so often has for us. Well, that was a whirlwind through the text. And again, you said it at the start of the show, there's just plenty to work with here. This is a week where there's no shortage. Again, we all have to decide, so what is the word to be received in our location for my people? Sorry to say the people in the pews. Very few of us will have people in the pews, but whether you're preaching to a Facebook group or live to a camera heading out, or you're pre-arranging your services or whatever, lots to think about. Pick something, jump on it, and we hope it goes real good for all of you.
I am passionately preaching to the backside of an iPad. I just keep my eyes focused on that iPad that's recording me, and I wait, you know, and I do not look elsewhere. I look at that pad. And I'm going to save that pad. It's going to say, "Yes, I will follow Jesus," before I'm done.
You let me know when that iPad walks out.
When that iPad says, "Yes, Jesus, I will."
Yes, Lord, I will be a preacher. Okay, man. Well, thanks for the another week walking through, Bubba. y'all check out the Lectionary Lab virtual retreat coming up, and we'll be around next time. We'll shift over to a new month, and we'll keep talking. But I reckon for today, not much left for us to do, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is The Gem, performed by Slink and Mr. Stabilina. We go out today with the composition by Ken Miedema. This is entitled Moses.
And the bush was burning. God said, take off your shoes, Moses, 'cause you're on holy ground. Moses, I've chosen you to be my man. Moses, over there in Egypt's land. Moses, I've chosen you to work for me. Moses, I've chosen you to set my people free. Not me, Lord. You know I can't talk so good. I stutter all the time. Do you know my brother Aaron? He can sing like an angel, talk like a preacher. Not me, Lord. I can't talk so good. And another thing, how will I've been here with you? How will they know what you sent me to do? Don't you know in Egypt they want little Moses' head? Don't you know in Egypt, Lord, they want little Moses dead? Don't you know they'll never hear a single word I say? Better get your dirty work done another way. Not me, Lord. What's that in your hand, Moses? Just a rod. Throw it down, Moses. You mean like on the ground? Yes, I said throw it down, Moses. Don't take this rod away from me. Don't you know it's my only security? Don't you know when you live here all alone, man's gotta have something he can call his own? Now please, Lord, throw it down, Moses. But Lord, I throw it down, Moses. Throw it down, Moses. Moses threw the rod on the ground, and the rod became a hissing snake. Moses started running. I bet you'd run. I know that I'd run. Was a running from a hot rod, running from a hissing snake, running scared of what the Lord's gonna do, running scared he'll get a hold of you. When the Lord said stop, pick it up, Moses, by the it's Rod again. It's Rod again. Smoke and bushes, it's Rod again. Do you know what it means, Moses? Do you know what I'm trying to say, Moses? God. With a rod of God, strike the rocks and the waters will come. With a rod of God, you'll part the waters of the sea. With the rod of God, you will strike old Pharaoh dead. With the rod of God, oh, you'll set my people free.